Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hope you are all well, witches. On today's episode, we are talking connection to the land and the cosmos with Ed Kirk Smith. Our book review today is Find Your Soul Path, Discover the Magical Life Within, written by Emma Griffin. Here is the book's blurb. Create the life you have always dreamed of, brimming with ancient wisdom and natural magic. Modern-day witch and intuition teacher Emma Griffin shares the rituals, meditations, spells and advice that you need for connecting with your authentic self and living a truly magical life. Learn how to develop a spiritual practice that feeds your soul, creates space for daily happiness, and celebrate the joy of living in harmony with your intentions as you move through the world on your soul path. So you may remember Emma came onto the podcast a couple of episodes back on the soul path episode. One of my friends, Kelly, made me laugh so much because Emma sounds so calm and at peace. And I'm just bouncing off the walls in that episode with all this hyper energy. I loved speaking to Emma. I think she just got me in such a high vibration that I couldn't help myself. Her book is just stunning. A gorgeous hardback with the most wonderfully witchy cottagecore aesthetic. There's photographs throughout. This is the sort of book you might want to have on a coffee or bedside table to regularly dip in and out of, as it's just packed full of different inspiration. A wide variety of topics throughout that offer a snapshot into each, from creating a sacred space throughout your entire home to your altar, cleansing your sacred space, morning routines, meditations, journaling, sacred cacao rituals. There is a section on rituals that looks at the Sabbaths, but also has rituals around birthdays and grief. There is a section called work, which focuses on shadow work, fears, anxiety, your authentic self, affirmations, your inner child, and limited beliefs. There's also a section on self, which looks at self-love, conscious motherhood, the soul, boundaries, and grief. This book injected some motivation into me to create more sacred routine around my home, but also myself. It helps me with the process of wintering across this darker season, and also helped me appreciate how much the little things are a huge basis of my personal happiness, relating to how my home feels and the small daily commitments that I make to myself. I think this is a great book for beginner witches, but also offers plenty of food for thought and inspiration to more seasoned witches. Although it's a witchy book, you could easily also give this to someone who simply classes themselves as spiritual. If you're still sitting on the fence with this book, have a look at Emma's Instagram page, which is at Emma Griffin Witch. Her imagery on her page is absolutely stunning, a mix of cottagecore and witchy, and it might help you see why I adore this book and the photos throughout so much. Absolutely love this book, and I hope you might too. Join me after the break to talk all about connection to the land and the cosmos. Welcome back. So I am here with Ed Kirk Smith. In 2015, Ed left a chaotic life in London with his young family in search of a new beginning and found reconnection to natural processes with the power of the moon. This cosmic enlightenment was partly responsible for his organization called Rebel Pharma, which looks to demonstrate the incredible power of permaculture design to create nutritious seasonal food and build a community that has reciprocal connection to the landscape. He aims to continue to build this movement to support the recovery of nature with a whole system approach to localized food systems and how this can help save the planet. Welcome to the show, Ed.
Hi, Carly.
It's so good to have you on after all this time.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Thank you so much for having us.
So, Ed, I've been very fortunate to come over and see where you work and met you through my mum, who is, of course, very much a, what I like to think, a green witch. I like to think you are, I always see you as someone like working with the land, living the good life. I know there's far more to it than that. I already know a little of your story, not much, as how you came to be doing what you are doing now. But can you give me and the listeners some insight into your journey to living on and working with the land and how you got there?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, I mean, I have quite a story, really, very progressive story. But I grew up in London. I'm from London, and I grew up with my family in Camberwell, southeast London. Yeah. And I was, I became a tree surgeon after much a debate of what I was going to do with my life. And that was really where my sort of journey with connection, I should say, probably sort of started. You know, I really fell in love with the trees. I was working with the trees and working outside each day. And I really, really sort of resonated with them. And I felt like a deep sort of love and understanding for them after working with them for a few years. And this actually sort of led towards wanting probably not to cut them down and work on them as much. As I started growing older and starting a new family, my life sort of changed, really. And I sort of came to a new place where I wanted to sort of start again. I had a little moment, actually, Carly. I was in the supermarket on Dog Kennel Hill, it is, in southeast London, in Sainsbury's.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had my I tell this story a lot. And I had my boy Freddie. He was probably about one at the time, and he was sitting in the trolley. And he was sucking on one of those Eddie's organic pouches, you know, they're sort of like those things, and I had a bit of an epiphany moment. I looked down at him sort of sucking on this plastic pouch and this trolley full of plastic, you know, stuff from all over the world, from unknown origins, you know. And I was looking up and the incandescent lights of the supermarket and the beeping of the tills, and I had a bit of a sort of moment, and I sort of said, no, this is not what I want. This is not what I want for Fred. This is not what I want for me. And it was a real moment for me. I'd recently discovered something called permaculture. Mm-hmm. And permaculture is a sort of design process. It's a way of thinking. It's sort of set around these ethical principles. And I really wanted to sort of start living like that. And so my work as a tree surgeon sort of led me into how I could sort of start a life based around permaculture. Permaculture is all about observation and understanding the problems around Problems that we see in the world, basically, and trying to find like natural and positive solutions to those. So at the end of every working day, working with the trees, I'd have a truck full of what was known as green waste. And this really wasn't waste, is what I realized. I realized that this could be a resource. I realized that what you could do with this green waste was that you could basically create a compost with it, and you could use that compost to enrich soil. And then you could grow food in that soil to nourish yourself and to support biodiversity, to support nature. So this was one of the big moments for me and was really instrumental in my move out of London. So yeah, like you said, I moved out of London in 2015 to really pursue this idea. And we ended up here in lovely Brook, which is in the Kent Downs National Landscape, and I've got about 3 acres here. And we sort of started a design. We started designing a permaculture idea, which didn't use the whole of the land. And very much at first, I sort of sectioned off just about half acre of land to sort of work on as a growing plot, having not grown anything in my life, I should ask. I should add, I hadn't started a seed at all. In fact, I'd grown a tomato in my London garden. I was very proud of this tomato. I've got a picture of Freddie holding it as a young kid. And that really sort of set me off on the path to where I am today, which is a long way down the line. But yeah, only 8 years as well. So yeah, a lot has happened in that time.
Oh my, I love this story. First off, I know Camberwell well. Used to go drinking there, one of my old haunts.
Yeah.
It's
We
very
probably met there,
foreign.
Carly. We probably met there in the past. You never
Honestly, I'm just thinking of my times of staggering around in Camberwell.
know.
I know where you are, and like that's a huge change in lifestyle. Secondly, I really understand what you mean about the tree surgeon work. So I've met a few tree surgeons, and it's very much the case of they become very sympathetic and very connected to the trees, and then they've got this dilemma of, this is what what they're doing with that job is such a tricky one. But also, I always think with different initiatives, because I probably met you a couple of years ago now, and I bumped into you and heard from my mum different things that you're doing and some other people you guys are connected with. And I think it's really commendable how you'd gone from growing one tomato, just like, sod it, I'm doing this now, and this is what I'm going to make happen. Because I think that just shows, like, if you've got this dream, this desire to do something, it's just got to be there and to want it enough to just go sod it. What's the worst that could happen? I'm going to try it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I saw a lot of problems with the world, and I suddenly had this little bundle of joy child, and really started thinking about his future. And I was like, what do I have? What can I give back to sort of try and, say that I've done my best, and try and sort of secure a nice future for him. And it just felt that, that I should, look at this way of life in order to do that. I felt like I'd grown up and I'd learned everything I needed to know from London, and I felt like I was missing something. I always had like this amazing love for nature. I was absolutely obsessed with David Attenborough as a kid, had all of his books, and just couldn't wait for the next season to come out, always like glued to the screen. And that was so much my favorite thing. And when as a family, when as a kid, we used to go on holidays, I used to absolutely love getting out into the countryside. I think it was just that really started to come out in me. And I was like, well, maybe I could just give Freddie that from the beginning, and he was just 3 years old, 3 and a half years old when we moved out here. So he doesn't really have any memories of London now, which is really weird, because I do.
I'm the same, and I'm the same. I've moved out to a really rural area. I mean, my house, and I've got a very small traditional garden, but I'm right in the middle of nature and fields, and it's proper farming land. There's very little else here. But I also feel, and you might resound with this as well, I do go back to London. I've still got friends there, and I know we're kind of like
living, you know, living in my mind, like we've moved out, living the good life on the land in a sense. But it is still possible for, you know, any of our listeners, and there are lots of initiatives and things going on in London that you can still connect to with growing and, you know, doing these sorts of things. You like, I feel like I also want to say, like, it isn't just a case of everyone's got to move to the country. Like, you can still do things if you still want to remain in big cities and towns and, you know, like growing your tomatoes on a balcony and so on, if that's where you need to remain and that's what you want to do.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what I now teach, you know, is the fact that, you know, you could, there's a plant for every space. You can grow food on your windowsill. You don't even need sunlight, actually, you know, if you to grow some nutritious food. But you know, and you don't need all of that land. And there are lots of great initiatives in London. You're right. In fact, that, you know, what I've noticed in the school system down here is they don't actually seem to connect as much with food growing as they do in London. I did some work in some London schools, you know, with my tree work and stuff. And all the London schools had like an edible garden sort of thing going on. And actually, when I came down here, Freddie's school, which is in the middle of like all of this agricultural country, didn't have a thing. And I had to build one. I actually designed and built a school garden for Freddie's primary school, Lady Joanna Thornhill in Y, to try and sort of like go, guys, you know, look, we all need to be growing some food here, you know, like kids really need to learn where this food has come from.
You live in the countryside, you know, we don't need to bother.
that's it.
It's
really interesting. But that's that garden, you know, I got that up and going. I'm really quite proud of that. I sort of got it up and going, and then with the intention of like just, you know, passing it on. I'm not really a teacher, but I was thrust into sort of running gardening club there for a little while. But I, you know, during COVID, I actually sort of like, you know, I couldn't do that anyway. And by the end of COVID, they'd really embraced that garden and they now use it within their sort of curriculum at the school. So I'm really happy about that. You know, it's still having the effect that that I gave it, I suppose, in 2018 when I did that. So, yeah. Really interesting.
I think that's great, Ed. And I also think, I mean, I really am so excited to get into this conversation with you, because for me, like, I know you've got a really strong message to share. I feel, for me, like one of my initiatives this year is there are so many witches, you know, people that consider themselves pagan, heathen, spiritual, they've all got this concept of Mother Earth. And, you know, I feel like sometimes with the circles I move in terms of the witchy stuff, like we get to a certain point with the green witch life, as in, oh, you know, plant in your garden and that's about it, you know? And I think there's a lot of us witches that kind of wants to do more and wants to know more about the land and, you know, areas like permaculture and so on, because we do want to make changes, and but we just don't know where to start. So that's really why I wanted to get you on, to kind of open this up so it might inspire some listeners to think, okay, I'm going to go and look into this now, or this kind of spring I want to look at more than just planting my seeds. I want to start considering this and what I can do. I like to think you are kind of, I know you're like working with the land, and I wanted to kind of get into some specifics relating to working with and planting by the moon, because I know that is very witchy and one of the areas that you're very interested in. I know you don't class yourself as a witch, but, you know, for the sake of us witches, we all love the moon. So that's what I wanted to kind of get into. If you had some insight into how you first began working with the moon, your relationship with her and the land itself.
I've got a real love for the moon. You know, my wife calls me a lunatic, you know. I especially found that when I came to Kent. I think what happens in London is that you sort of you can see the moon like behind the buildings occasionally. And you sort of go, oh, look, there's the moon, and it's in the sky. It's just sort of there. It's a full moon tonight. Oh, look at that lovely crescent. And you just think it's in a sort of random part of the sky. And I really didn't have any sort of understanding of the rhythm of the moon until I moved out. I'm very lucky with the orientation of my land here. It's part of the permaculture thing. When I came to see this house, I noticed that the land was sloping to the south, to the southwest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really good for, in my head at the time, was really good for drying out the land and draining the land during the spring to get it ready for growing nice and early. So I saw this as a really key advantage. But what it does also give you is this amazing view. I'm at the top of a hill as well, of the south. And obviously that is where the moon and the sun pass by us, and we can see them from and just from this lovely orientation of my land, I have a fantastic view of this. So when I came down here, I really started to admire the moon in particular, because it was just there in the sky, like, you know, quite a lot of the month. And we have quite dark skies here, although I'm quite close to Ashford. There's a bit of, you know, there's a little bit of light pollution coming from sort of M20, the Ashford side of things. But we've really got a lovely sky, and I get to see the moon and the stars. And I just sort of really fell in love with this river. I found a real solace and meditative sort of time with the moon in the evenings. So I quite often just end up going out and staring at it. And I found real connection just from this. This is part of permaculture, is this sort of this observation being the real key to the design, you know, and just observing nature and its patterns, its natural patterns, and then sort of basically using those patterns to go about your design and your life. So I started to see these patterns and admire these patterns. But what I noticed straight away is, and I think I'd always noticed this a little bit, people go a bit mad around the full moon. But in this sort of quite isolated and on my own sort of feeling, I could feel that energy without others around. I always just sort of observed it in London. It's like, oh, it's full moon, everyone's gone a bit mad.
Yeah.
Out here, I could just feel this like energy of you know, this excitement that would come just in the few days coming up towards the full moon. And I quite often find that actually all my energy would be completely drained by the time we got to the full moon. The full moon itself would be a day of like, I'm just knackered now, because the last few days have been like just so intense that I'd do that. And then I started noticing that the new moon also had these quite interesting feelings, they were low points a little bit. They were sort of times where I wasn't so energetic, and sort of more recently have sort of used those times as times of understanding of creating intention for the coming moon. You know, they're times to sort of set intentions for the next lunar cycle and to sort of step back and just have some rest. So yeah, it's really interesting. So this sort of led me to sort of study a little bit as well. So I can tell you a little bit about biodynamics if you like.
Would love you to. Yes, absolutely.
So I sort of came across this because, I, you know, once I got down here and started growing, I found that a few people were using this thing called biodynamics. At first I thought that was like, oh, it's just, you know, that's just like organic, like agriculture. And then I realized that it was connected to the moon. I thought, wow, okay, I've got some sort of, you know, feelings around that. Mm-hmm. So I started looking into it, and it's really interesting. So there's an amazing guy called Rudolf Steiner. He lived from 1861 till 1925, and was really a philosopher at heart. But I mean, he explored lots of ideas. And became quite a big public figure. But one of his real passions was all around the soil and the health of the soil. And he could see at the beginning of the century, sort of beginning of the 1900s, that all the sort of like mechanized agriculture was coming in was actually detrimental to the soil health and was detrimental to nature. And he sort of really started to try to come up with a way of counteracting that. And it was shortly before he died, actually, in 1924, he was finally convinced to do a book and some lectures about it. Well, the book is actually just of the lectures. He did eight lectures in June 1924, around just called agriculture. And he sort of set out the whole thing of biodynamics. He really recognized the importance of the health and interplay of cosmic and earthly influences on nature, and he could see how you could use these influences to grow healthy food without using these chemicals or mechanized agriculture. And he started making these homeopathic preparations to sort of create a sort of medicine to boost the immune system of the soil in order for it to create these healthy plants. And this, really, really interesting. So he sort of really developed these ideas, which then went on later after his death to be sort of taken on by quite a few people as sort of working and developed further. So Maria Thun, who was, basically born when Steiner died, she was born in 1922, became a real leading voice in biodynamics. She passed in 2012, but she was really she comes up with this she came up with this amazing calendar, and after lots and lots of sort of experimentation of working with these cosmic influences, she sort of nailed down when key points within the lunar cycle to start seeds and to put preparations down, and really sort of connected with these elements, these earthly elements. So the earth element affects the roots, and the water element affects the leaves, and the air element affects the flowers, and then the fire element is about the fruit and the seed. So when it comes to the sort of lunar thing, so this the moon moves through the 12 different constellations throughout the lunar month, and basically each one of those constellations sort of then connects to one of these elements. So Virgo, Capricorn, and Taurus are roots. Libra, Aquarius, and Gemini are flower. Scorpio, Pisces, and Cancer are leaf, and Sagittarius, Aries, and Leo are the fruit and seed. And by using these basic ideas, there's an amazing calendar which I use every year. It's called the Maria Thun calendar. It's republished every year. There's a new one. I've got it sitting in front of me here, actually. And it's just instrumental in like setting intentions and using these cosmic influences to grow the food. And I just become fascinated with it because having tried it, I can definitely sort of see that it works. And I feel like it really gives me this lovely connection to the moon and to using the moon and setting intentions for the plants that I'm growing using natural influences, patterns, and elements. So it's just become incredible, really. I've been using it for the last few years. You can't always stick to it, but I use it very much for the times that I start my seeds. And I have to say, I haven't really delved too much into the preparations, but I've been studying them for some time, and sort of, it's just something you can't quite do on your own. But I finally found someone else locally that's doing it. In fact, I found a few people. There's you might know that in Kent here, we've got the we had the Steiner School up near Canterbury, which life school.
I know.
So that's a piece of biodynamic land that's been in biodynamic certification now, which is called Demeter. There's a certification for using biodynamics. So Leo Brockman is very much leading that there, and he's using biodynamics there, which sort of goes beyond organic certification into these sort of cosmic influences, and he's been using it there for many years and still does, to grow mainly to grow wheat and to grow cereal crops. And he also grows these lovely longhorn beef cattle. So he's just got this sort of lovely lovely thing going on there, where he doesn't use any chemicals on his land. He just uses these preparations and the moon influences to grow food in this way. So really lovely. And then locally, I've also just met a really lovely soul called Joe, who started a little organic farm not too far from me, just down the road. And just this year, actually, I learned just a few weeks ago, we created the Three Kings preparation, which is the sort of first one of the year, which is all around, it's actually using gold, frankincense and myrrh, which sounds obscure. you basically crush them up in a pestle and mortar, and you put a small amount in some water, and you mix that, and you have to create this vortex of, you mix it for a whole hour by hand, to sort of really energize this water. And then you basically go around the boundaries of your land, and you push that out there to ward away sort of evil spirits and to protect your land for the season. It's like the beginning of the season, and it's corresponds to, it's like the 6th of January, which is Epiphany, going back to sort of early Christian pagan thought processes, which again totally aligns with the stars. So the Three Kings are basically Orion's belt, and they followed the bright star, which is Sirius, to Bethlehem, according to, you know, the Christian thinkings. But actually it goes before that, to into pagan times, really, where this was all about just what was going on in the sky. You know, that was our TV at the time, was this sky and these beautiful stars, and what they did at certain times of year corresponded to how we treated the land and connected to the earth. So yeah, it really interesting. It's just something that I'm continuing to learn by. But if anyone wants to learn more about that, yeah, just look up Rudolf Steiner. I'm sure a lot of people know about him, and the work of Maria Thun, which is Thun. You'll find out a lot more about the biodynamics and the biodynamic calendar. Yeah.
I got tingles listening to this, because I'm like going to go down some huge rabbit holes now. I feel so inspired to get that calendar, and there's so many bits in there. The part you said about the almost kind of the setting the boundaries, and I guess it's like a blessing with the gold, frankincense, myrrh, the Three Kings aspect that you were talking about. That really, I was quite amazed by that, because that, I guess, with the land, like even to this day, there are still many farmers and, that will still do things like that. It's so deeply ingrained in the history of working with the land, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's a massive community of biodynamic farmers. It's used quite a lot in creating wine. Quite a lot of people might see that people make biodynamic wine. Biodynamic wine, you know, I think that's the real teller, is that the biodynamic wine just tastes so much superior to normal wine. So by using the cosmic influences, you can make the best wine. So it's really, really interesting, that one. I think it's used quite a lot in cereal crops as well, wheat in particular, to create, you know, the best bread. You know, so it's you know, for farmers that come across it and start using it and creating ritual around their food production, they tend to get better results. So this is not just connecting to the cosmos, but also helping sustain a healthy life with a nice livelihood of farming, and creating something that might compete a little bit better against your neighbors, you know, so that you have the better crops and you have the better produce. And therefore are more successful in farming. So there's it's a really interesting thing that I want to continue to learn. I mean, I've just passed across basically all the information that I know about it, really.
But no, it's more than I know. And I feel like it's a
there's
great...
People not, yeah, So I think I just one more thing is Charles Dowding. People may well have heard of him. He's quite a YouTube sensation when it comes to growing food. No Dig, he's sort of the godfather of No Dig. He won't talk too much about biodynamics, but he certainly uses it. He just doesn't want to. I think he just wants to have the broadest audience possible. And as I'm sure a lot of the witches know, that you can get singled out for being into these sort of things. And it's interesting to see that he hasn't sort of done that just so he can have greater reach with his work, which is it's just it's a sad thing, isn't it, really? But if you could, Charles Dowding is one of my massive influences when it comes to growing food as well, and how you can look after the soil. And his calendar basically uses the biodynamic dates. So his calendar, if you go to his website and get his calendar for the year, you'll also get some tips and tricks on actually how to grow the veg as well. And you can sort of follow his YouTube. So yeah, highly recommend him.
Do you know every December I have to get a bloody Charles Dowding calendar for my mum? So it's like she's looking at her veg porn again, and we always take the mickey and say, like, because obviously he's always in the pictures for each month, and like my dad's always taking the mickey out there and saying, like, he's going to be there with a cauliflower strategically positioned and so on.
Yeah, I sometimes say that. I just say I'm gay for Charles Dowding is one of the things I sort of say. Yeah, so it's
He's so
definitely.
like, I do have a bit of a perv over his gardens on his Instagram at times because they're just so tidy. I just can't cope,
Yeah,
my. But yeah.
completely immaculate. He does give me a little bit of imposter syndrome, because I was like, I just can't get it. I just can't get there.
Needs
Every
a
year I
lot
try
of
to
help,
be as good as
Owen.
it.
He needs a lot of help, honestly. Yeah, and I know what you mean, I guess, because I know this is a thing with even kind of a lot of, yeah, I guess I know what you're saying with he's not kind of going into a lot of the spiritual aspect of it, if I can sort of say, not the spiritual aspect, rather like the cosmic side and the other elements that you've discussed that are in this calendar and so on, because it is appealing to the masses. And sometimes when you go into those elements, they just shut it down and it's like, nope, he's kind of going into it on a base level, I guess, rather than overwhelming the masses with the other elements of it that they aren't going to get on board with necessarily.
Yeah, that's right. I went to see him in person. He did like a lecture thing a few years ago, and I went to see him, and he did talk about it during that, which so he's not against like talking about it. He just seems to not use it on his YouTube, shall we say. He does talk about it slightly in his books as well, but he's just like he keeps it very on the minimum. And I sort of yeah, I seem to un I sort of get that a little bit. Because it's funny, isn't it? When I start talking about the moon and its influences, some people, you just see their faces and they just sort of like, okay, right. It's like they just start sort of going into that, like, okay, he's talking about the moon now. It's interesting, isn't it? Like how so many people just completely dismiss it. And I wish that was different. I really do. And I think one day it probably will be. We'll understand it. The science will back it up a bit further, and we'll understand a little bit more about these cosmic influences and how we can connect to them and use them to our advantage, and really have better connection with the cosmic things that are going on. It's really interesting when you think about it, and they talk about this in the Maria Thun calendar, is that you look out at those stars, don't you? And they're too far away to even comprehend, right? But actually, there is a big lump of rock in the sky, and that's called the moon. And then actually there are two very, there's some other really big things in our solar system. The sun is absolutely vast, and obviously because it is so big, has a massive influence on us. But Jupiter and Saturn are also absolutely vast objects up there, and in comparison to all those other dots in the sky that you can see and you can view, when you view Jupiter and Saturn, you can know that they're actually really close, and we should understand how close they are in a sort of cosmic sense. because they have, of course, they have influence over us. They're within our solar system. They're within our bounds, you know. And it's really interesting. And I would really recommend anyone that wants to get into this to pick up just even a cheap telescope or a decent pair of binoculars and start looking at not only the moon, but to find out where Saturn and Jupiter are in the sky and to have a look at them. Because I've really enjoyed that over the last few years as well. I've just got a really cheap telescope. It's a 70 mil telescope. Someone donated it to me. And I can see the rings of Saturn with that. And I can also see the beautiful moons of Jupiter, Io, Ganymede, Callisto, and Europa. I absolutely love seeing them. And the moons move around Saturn, around Jupiter every night. So if you look every single night, they're in a different position. And it's really, really interesting to see that. You know, you really get a sense of the things that are going on up there, these amazingly large, like cosmic happenings, you know, as these things move around. And of course they have influence on us. Why would you dismiss that? So it's really interesting to think about that and to connect with those planets as well, you know, just as many of the civilizations of the past, especially sort of the Greeks and the Romans, connecting to those beings in the sky, you know.
I've started to get very interested in the constellations.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Because I keep finding out, researching on goddesses that are linked to a certain. So I just looked at the bear goddess culture, the cults of the bear goddesses and gods, and there was a lot of links to the little bear, the big bear, the little bear. I think Callisto is one of the names that it goes under because of the link to the a particular story with her and Zeus. And that's got me looking into the sky and looking at this stage, my daughter's dad just said to me, you should get a telescope because you can see the sky so well here. I feel you saying that is my call to get one, but I'm always on just a little app on my phone because I'll see certain stars and try to figure out what the shape of them is and so on. But yeah, for me, that's become last year with clearer skies, a real fascination to discover what's up there. And not just, you know, that these can all affect us, but it's so humbling as well. When you're kind of, sometimes I'm such an overthinker. I let myself get bogged down with such rubbish at times. And I'll go out and I'll look at the moon or the stars. And I don't know, for me personally, it just makes me think, why are you worrying about this crap? Like, look at, we're in this, you know, it's that old, like we're on this rotating planet surrounded by all these stars and infinity and so on. And it's just so humbling for me and a bit of a kind of, yeah, forget about that.
That's right. Yeah, it does put things into perspective, doesn't it? I really find that too. It's a real sort of humbling thing to look up at the stars and the moon and to sort of understand how small we are. Yeah, I think that really helps, you know. I think, you know, the Carl Sagan quote, you know, when we sort of look back at Earth, there's a picture of Earth looking back from the Voyager missions in the 70s, and he talks about this, and he his very famous speech where he calls Earth a pale blue dot, and then he's sort of like looking back to Earth from Jupiter, basically, and understanding like how small we are, how Earth is just one And it's such a singularity. We are all one on this planet, and all of our disputes, wars, and nonsense is just, it just gets thrown out the window when you look at us as like this one. It's like, why aren't we just all working together? So I love that overview theory, that overview effect that we get. It's just one planet, it's one living ecosystem, and I really admire those sort of thoughts and feelings as well, to sort of like put things into perspective.
I also think it helps because I really struggle at times. I have to really be conscious of seasonal adjustment disorder because I'm very much a summer person, and I know that I need to appreciate autumn and winter as much as I can to stay sane. And for me, like, that has been looking at the stars, because there's so much more night, obviously, and also things like sunrises. The sunrise is much later. I'm just very conscious of getting out and looking at that, and that really does change the day for me. Otherwise, I'll just kind of go into this like place of darkness mentally. It's very important, just going out for like a 10-minute walk. I'm not working on the land like you, Ed. I really have to shift my ass and get out there and kind of, connect with it on that level, or just sit in the garden with a cup of tea as well as doing that. Otherwise, it's so easy to lose the plot being indoors all the time and not connecting to outside.
That's it. I think it's really important, even on those cold nights. It's actually in these cold nights you've got much more opportunity to see the stars, actually. So just wrap up warm and get out there, really, even if it's for just for 10 minutes. You can take a hot drink with you and just have a quiet meditation, looking up at those stars and understanding our place in the universe. Really, it's really interesting. I think that's been instrumental to the well-being, my well-being. I think leaving London, a part of leaving London was leaving some of those traumas behind, of the madness of London, or the chaotic nature of London. And I found a lot of solace and sort of a reconnection, like I sort of talk about, is just through observation of the beautiful patterns of the universe, you can see them everywhere. You can see them out in the stars, but you can also see them in the soil, and you can see them in the plants. You can see these patterns everywhere, and it's just give yourself the time to actually observe those patterns, and you will find like that it can give you a lot of well-being, is what I found.
I know many of our listeners are really interested in working with the land, the moon, seasons, and growing their own. And obviously this time of year, a lot of us, myself, are thinking about what I can do this year on that front. Can you give us some insight or advice to someone who is doing this on a bigger scale as to what you feel is important to know and ways to get started?
Yes. Well, it's an interesting one. I've been working on a small bit of land, and I called this organization Rebel Farmer, but actually, I'm not really a farmer, but what I'm trying to create with Rebel Farmer is farmers. I'm trying to like create a new system of growing food with, like I sort of mentioned, reciprocal sort of relationships with the land. A lot of large-scale farmers, you can't blame them for what they've done, because the system has basically pushed them in this certain way, but they have been destroying the landscape quite dramatically, especially for the last sort of 40, 50 years. But basically since the Second World War, we've been creating, chemical warfare with our landscape, and we're seeing some really dramatic results in the decline of our biodiversity and in the toxicity of our soils, our skies, our waters, and it does primarily come down to how and what we eat. It's really interesting. So for people that have larger pieces of land, and I'm starting to reach out to them. I'm sort of forming a bit of a cluster here in East Kent. Now I understand quite a lot of the dynamics of how we can create something known as regenerative agriculture. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to sort of almost advise and become an advisor on how we can create systems that that move away from this chemical dependency into much more like holistic systems of management. And really, it's all about sort of one of the main problems that we face is glyphosate. I'm not going to go into it too deeply because I could probably talk about that for a whole hour. But really, some of the things that we've been doing using glyphosate are so detrimental. We're only just starting to understand what that actually looks like. I think, you know, basically a lot of the diseases that we see within humanity and a lot of the systems failures we see within nature are down to this one horrible chemical called glyphosate that really, really disrupts things at a very, very cellular level, right down to this genetic side of things. And there is known it's actually known to be epigenetic. So it actually creates a trauma so deep that it passes on to the next generation. So if you're exposed to glyphosate, your children are going to actually be affected by that. And there is a lot of cases to be sort of seen around the idea of it being connected to a lot of the autoimmune dysfunctions that we see, but also to autism, which is absolutely so scary to think about. But actually, we've probably only seen the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the autism epidemic. It's just going to be huge. We've gone from 1 in 5,000 people with it to 1 in 50 in a generation, and yeah. A lot of people are now starting to call out this horrible way of creating food. We actually use glyphosate to kill. It's a herbicide, Roundup. It's basically kills weeds. It's what yeah. people spray on their dandelions or whatever to get a nice pristine lawn. And but it's what's used in agriculture to basically kill weeds in the field. And it's used quite often right at the start of the seed's journey. Like just as they put seed in the ground, they'll just wait a few days and then they'll see the emergence of the weed seeds and they'll spray that ground. And of course, you'd think that would affect the seeds, but what's happened is like there's an amazing collaboration between the big companies that sort of seem to run the food system, like Monsanto, that run the chemical and they own the seeds, that they make these Roundup ready seeds, which is like these glyphosate tolerant seeds to make this system work. And then yeah, it's just a horrible thing. What I really sort of want to see and what I'm trying to promote is the idea that we can go for chemical free agriculture. We've got an amazing communication network called the internet, which allows us to sort of talk across the world about food and farming and practice and techniques. And we're now like we've basically figured it out. We can grow food to the yields that we've been seeing with all of these chemicals without the chemicals. And we can increase biodiversity, we can look after nature, recover nature, and we can leave the earth better than when we found it, just using some quite simple techniques. And going back to where we're talking about, it's all about these patterns again. We can use and mimic nature to create these incredible systems of regeneration to feed the soil and to create an abundant food system again. We really need to get rid of this globalized thing. We can't be importing all of our foods. So there's quite a lot of interesting debate going on at the moment. Many people will have heard of rewilding, and in many circumstances that can be a really good way of like recovering the land and sort of giving it back to nature. And I'm a real advocate for some of that. But we also have to produce more food, because at the moment we're importing 60, 70, 80% of our food when we could be growing it here. But this comes down to a cultural problem, which is around how and what we eat. Because we've become the supermarkets have essentially made us so accustomed to being able to get things throughout the year that maybe aren't seasonal, that aren't grown within that season, and we just get them imported and we use them, and we get used to like using avocados throughout the year from the other side of the planet, or strawberries during winter when we, really strawberry season is just a few months in summer, right? It's just, we've got to change our habits in order to help the system. So that's where I, Rebel Farmer again, coming back in is about that cultural shift as well. So I'm very, very into to that side of it. The only way to sort of change the way the farmers are actually farming is to, for us as consumers, to like eat and in a certain way, in a seasonal way, to eat local and seasonal produce, and cook from fresh. But a lot of people don't even, have houses without kitchens these days. It's ridiculous. We've all got to like really get into like food. It's such a nice thing to do, is just get together and cook and to sit around the table and eat. And that's a massive part of it. And the education of our children is the other one. So some of the things we've been talking about today really need to be in the school system. They aren't, and it's a travesty, because the children, especially before they get the distractions of their screens and stuff, the primary school children are absolutely love being in nature. I've seen it firsthand, and I'm sure a lot of you seen it. You can really get them involved with growing food and understanding where food comes from at that early age before they become completely distracted by our modern lives. And even if they disappeared into the screens throughout their teenage years, if they've got that sort of fundamental foundation of understanding, they can really, take that forward in their later years, and hopefully use that to the betterment of the planet. And it's all about how we consume food and where it comes from. So it's really interesting. I'm really on a path. It's like, Rebel Farmer. A lot of people probably think that I'm just like a market gardener, but very much I'm on this sort of front line of trying to sort of ignite this change, and to try and sort of let people understand the problems that exist, and offer them solutions so that we can sort of change this system. So yeah, when it comes to sort of big landowners and bigger farmers, please just start looking at the facts and figures, and understand that there is an alternative. We do need some more support, and there is some more support coming through. The government's actually finally starting to listen. It's not enough, but it's better than it was. And we're really going to see a bit of a shift this year in the way our food is created, and hopefully we can get it to a price that is equitable for all, because that's also very, very important. It shouldn't be just people of a certain income bracket being able to afford real food. We really need it there for, and in particular for people that are underprivileged, or haven't that don't have the income to sort of feed themselves properly. So yeah, we really need that. So yeah, I can bang on about it forever, Carly. You can see I've
No,
got
I'm listening.
quite
I'm
into
taking it all in, because I was gonna say, I think one of the problems is often assumption with food, because I think a lot of us assume, and we assume that our kids know where food comes from. We assume that we know what's a seasonal food as well. I'm not ashamed to say, for as green of a witch my mum is, a good few years ago, I was an absolute numpty when it came to where food came from. It just wasn't on my, grew up in London, didn't do any of it, wasn't on my, was just wasn't shown to me, other than my mum kind of trying to intersperse it in conversations we had and so on. But I didn't want to listen to her, sadly. But I think it's this assumption that we sometimes think we know where food comes from. We also think that our kids are having these conversations at school, and so a lot of kids, when there's been reports of kids thinking that meat just turns up in tiny packages and things like that, and it's actually kind of really looking at it and thinking, do I actually know what's seasonal right now? Do my kids even know where this, how these carrots turn up and where they grow, you know, even just asking that most basic of questions, because I think that we sometimes assume, and that's, you know, something maybe to start with, somewhere maybe we can start.
Yeah, I think so. Like I say, I think yeah, the school system could do a lot, really. I'm working with a new group actually called the Kent School of Food, that's looking to do just that, and to work with local schools to put food firmly in the curriculum. And it's not just like a food education class. You can actually put food into maths, physics, you know, you can put it into geography, and you can put it into history. You can put it into all of those subjects, and teach it that way. You know, it can be across the board. And that would, I think that would be one of the best ways of trying to avert what seems to be the human caused climate change, would be to sort of reduce the amount of carbon going into the atmosphere. You know, it really is just about reducing the food miles associated and the chemicals associated with our foods. It really is. We can grow it on a small scale. Large scale farming is just, at the moment, we're trying to work it out, but it's still completely run on fossil fuels. You know, there is no way you can run a farm of more than a few acres without a tractor. I run half an acre. It takes 1, 2, 3 of us probably full time to make some food on there. But yes, it's quite intensive labor, but it's a lovely livelihood. And what that does is that creates food for, you know, anything up to about 50 families. So, you know, we just need to, you know, we need to deglobalize this system and start to understand, like, the power of localism and community around food. I mean, I think it's the basis of community. Sitting around the table to eat is community. You know, it's where we share stories. It's where we interact and we can tell stories about the food, but also about everything else around that table, and then we can get a real understanding of how we can sort of make that positive change that I sort of see. So permaculture is all about that. It has these three pillars. Is earth care, but it's also people care, and it's fair share. Those are the three fundamental pillars behind the design process of permaculture, and that's what I'm continuously redesigning, really, and trying to improve on. And I think, you know, we everyone can have a little look at permaculture and try to understand it. A great place to start is a permaculture magazine. It's a fantastic just quarterly magazine. It's just going to cost you £12 a year or something, and then you're going to have that, and it's full of really lovely, enlightening articles about how you can reconnect with your landscape and your community, and how you can share it fairly. You know, I think that's what it's all about. So, I think, you know, we're on a sort of like you know, these connections to the cosmos can really help, because by understanding their influence and their magical powers, then we can start to sort of influence the food system quite greatly with them, and that can have amazing effects, like I've sort of suggested. So, you know, I'm an advocate for reconnection and you know, connection to the moon, connection to the soil, that living biome. And connections to ourselves, you know, understanding that we are, you know, basically a civilization within us, within our guts. We are just like, there is a whole civilization of things going on that we've got no idea about, really. We're only just touching the surface on in science, but I think we know deep down, especially a lot of the witches will understand the, you know, that connection, and that we are just like, you know, a coming together of many, many different elements, and you know, that's the way to sort of to heal this planet is to first heal ourselves, and to have that fundamental connection to ourselves, and then we can go on and hopefully, you know, help others to achieve that connection. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think I might go off. This is just a little bit of an off key sort of aspect on this, because I really connected with food food and plants and herbs and all things green, because like you were saying, like a lot of the stories behind them and a lot of the folklore. And I feel like for me, that was what really got me into more seasonal living with food and so on. When I looked at, because the witchcraft aspect was always the priority for me, I started to look into a lot of the magical associations, the folklore around certain vegetables, plants and so on. And for me, that was kind of what got me going, if that makes sense, to then start thinking, what am I eating? How is this supporting the planet? Now I feel a connection to these vegetables and these plants and so on. And I think if you're not kind of convinced on any of the other fronts, that might be the way, that kind of the stepping stone to get you on this track. But that for me was what built connection and got me on this kind of trajectory. I can never say that word. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's you can come, that's another lovely angle to come in on it. Like I've suggested, I think the moon has been a big part of connecting me to it, and it sounds like, you know, those sort of things can really help you connect in with the seasons, with the circularity, and with the magical nature of the earth and the cosmos. It's fascinating, really. I can't wait to learn more. I think that's the other thing, isn't it? Is that once you're on this path and you've decided that, you know, you're going to dedicate part of your life to something like this, that you're always going to be learning. There's no finish point. You're just, you know, you're on a continuous enlightenment that will hopefully, you know, keep you happy and healthy and understanding more. I'd love to know more. You know, I want to learn more from you, Carly. Like, you know, do you need to share some more of your experiences with me? And I'd love to know a little bit more about the witchcraft. I think there's another event coming up, isn't there? Wassailing.
Haven't been to an event yet, but I would love to. But there are a few near you, because I know my mum, I think, went to one or two.
Yeah, there's one this Saturday actually, which is sort of like Morris dances and storytelling with lots of fire in the orchards. Yeah. You know, blessing the orchards ready for the new year, drinking cider. Really interesting. I think that, you know, that goes back to some very old traditions. It's a very interesting one. I think a very much a Kent thing as well, you know, because we have so many orchards here. We're very much an apple growing area. So it's really interesting one. We're looking towards, when's our next point in the wheel of the year now? Here we are in January. It's like we've just passed a certain point, haven't we? What's the next one?
So in bulk next, and this is obviously when a lot of us will all start thinking of what our intentions are for our growing, be that, you know, for ourselves, but for the garden, that's the next one, which is, you know, the return of the light, quite a big one, I think. And that's the point when I start to feel like, yeah, we're coming out of the dark times. So yeah, that's always a really important one.
That's the 1st of February, isn't it? 1st of February. So that's not far away now, is it? Goodness me.
No, and I keep thinking that, because, you know, weeks. I think if you are someone that's sort of, I try not to be on the countdown for spring, but it's such an exciting time when you start thinking the land's going to start, you know, shoots start to come through. Still very early, but it's that little glimmer of the light returning, bit of hope, you know. It's like a lot of connection with the, you know, sheep, the lambs and so on. So yeah, it's a really, really important one for me and a lot of us, I think.
I think that's when where we see like quite a lot of, I think that's really the time of year when you start to see that the slight increase in light is then creating just enough to see the really early indications of spring. So spring is not there, but you can see the light is allowing you to see those early indications of the start of the year. And it's actually, you know, I usually start seeds pretty early in February, like some of the summer fruits, So it's it's not far away now.
Hang on, just hang on in
Yeah,
there.
it's a bit
My
cold today.
mum
It
would
was
say.
six minus six this morning on my car when I drove out. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, my mum's always like, just hang on in there, it's just around the corner, because she's always on about this sort of that time and it getting light again, because obviously she's such a well, my mum's got the nickname the compost queen, which is kind of, I know you guys, that's how I met Ed, through my mum, who is very much the compost queen. I definitely need to get her on to talk about, oh my goodness, all of her knowledge on that front. I think in terms of, I know you've already recommended some great resources. So one thing I wanted to ask you, in my romanticizing living off the land, which I often do, I often love to read books by people who live off the land that discuss the seasonal changes, and they do refer to the wheel of the year and, bits that we discussed. Also, like the history of the lands that they are on, and experiences that they have had. As I say, I romanticize it at times. And before we came onto our conversation today, you, Ed, were telling me about things going on where you are. But what are some of your favorite parts of the year working on the land? Or have you any moments that have really stuck with you, that have really, I don't know, been a bit awe moments, I guess, that you are happy to share?
Yeah, I really love the change in season. So I like the change. I don't, it's really interesting. I just like that those moments in the year when you suddenly see that change. And rather than anything specific, I love the circularity of it all. So that moment when the leaves turn color is in the autumn is a really special time. I really love that in particular, and I think and the spring. I just when you start to see the herbs and everything emerge, and see a bit of color with the daffodils and a few other early flowering plants, the magnolia. The magnolia is always such a When the magnolia flowers, you've just got so much hope at that point of the year, that it's, there's no turning back now. Like, spring is on its way, and I think that sort of continuous renewed hope that the little indications show you, is just magical, really. I'm trying to think of a memory. I think I was trying to think of one now, but I really do love that time of year when we start to see the mushrooms as well. So that autumn time of year, when you sort of, I quite often at that time of year, I'm just finally getting to the point of having a bit of a rest or slowing down slightly, having had, an immense summer working the land. So around that time of year, it's my birthday as well. The 3rd of November is, sorry, the 9th of November. My boy's birthday is the 3rd of November. So we always have a bit of a Samhain, celebration, Halloween celebration. That sort of time of the year is always probably my favorite. And it's an amazing time when things really just stop. I think I'm like most things just stop growing at that point. And the mushrooms emerge, and you have that sort of like real sort of change of guard, it feels like. And I finally get a bit of time to rest and to go and catch up with my friends and stuff. But I will mention this one memory that I have, which sort of connects us back to the moon a little bit. And I think it's about that friendship thing as well, is as how you can have these special moments with friends just by working with the moon. I was organizing a date for my bestest blokes to come over, really, and have a bit of a summer knees up. I sort of thought that I would use that power of the moon and the full moon to create a really good night. And I worked out that there was basically a really beautiful occasion when it was going to be a full moon. And it's also going to be a sort of beautiful display from Jupiter and Saturn being in the sky. And I wanted to have the boys over for a night to sort of really embrace that. And it was just, it's all perfect timing. You know, when you get into these rhythms and these patterns, I knew when the moon was going to rise, and it was going to, and then, you know, we're going to see Jupiter and Saturn rise as well. And at a certain time in the night, we could go for a moonlit walk, because the moon was high enough to light up the landscape, and we could just go out without torches to have a nighttime roam after a few beverages, you know. I took my friends on a moonlight tour of my plot, and I remember very, very clearly coming across this sunflower, and it was the same height as me and my friends. It was sitting there at about 6 foot, and it was just, it had the sort of same roundness as a face, and we were just in the moonlight, we were walking through the plot, and we just came across this amazing, beautiful sunflower, which was just facing the moon. It was just in full illumination. Wow. And we all just sort of stood around and admired this beautiful sunflower, and how it was also looking at the moon, you know, and I really felt this amazing connection. And we were looking up at the moon, and it was totally triangulated. So you had like the moon, yeah, and had Saturn and Jupiter, and they made a triangle in the sky. And it was just like, you know, these sort of like these little moments that were just, that just stick,
yeah,
in memory. And I sort of had pre-planned it, but it came together so well, and it's just like a really, really happy moment. So I thought I'd share that with you.
I love sunflowers, and they are like little faces just looking up at the sun, and I really, really love that. And it's funny because when, you know, I think about memories of the land I've got, and so many of them involve the moon, like when I've seen huge super moons, and I remember being in Paris and I turned around this corner and it was like this moon was sitting on the level of the pavement. It was up on a hill. It was just so huge, in between kind of, you know, two huge buildings on either side. And I think we've all got these moments where she's just a big part of our, you know, favorite times, really. But yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for sharing it. And you know what, you've got me thinking, I really need to get on my knowledge of the planets more. That's one of the things I'm definitely going to take away from this, that there's lots of things I'm going to read and follow up on. I definitely want to get a copy of the calendar you mentioned. But for our listeners that resonate with this discussion, I know I definitely have, and if they want to delve even further, are there other resources or books that you would recommend?
I think I've mentioned them really. Like, so the Maria Thun calendar is a really good place to sort of start, and to understand what, you know, how to use biodynamics in particular to grow food.
Yeah.
And I think we talk about apps these days. I really enjoy Starwalk, which, you know, gives you that sort of augmented like vision of the sky and understand what you're looking at a little bit further. And I've actually come across a really nice, it's a bit more of a sort of scientific app, but I really like it. It's called DAF Moon, D-A-F Moon. And I really like it, actually. I only just came across this actually the other day, but it's just a really good, tells you, you know, when the moon is going to rise and set, exactly how it looks at a certain time, where it is on the horizon, when and how it sort of correlates with where you are and where the sun is, where the moon is, and where the constellations are. So it's a bit like Star Wars, but it's a little bit, I really enjoyed that one, actually. I was looking at it the other day. But yeah, just read up about Rudolf Steiner. I think in general, his philosophy, his teachings are so, so powerful. He wrote like 50 books. Like, it's incredible. There's so much to read about him. And I could recommend actually his autobiography
that
he wrote about himself and his early years. Really interesting. Like, you know, gives you a real sort of understanding of like how he got to the place he was, which is still a little bit mystical, I have to say. It's really interesting. He just suddenly understood the cosmos, and I don't know how that happened. There's a few theories out there, but I think he met a sort of medicine man on the train to university.
Oh,
And
my goodness, right?
I think he may well have delved into some psychedelic realms there,
Yeah.
and I think that sort of may have triggered his understanding of the universe, which is really interesting, and I think there's probably quite a few listeners out there that might relate to that too. But it's I think really, I just want to leave you on just the power of yourself, and just being able to go out there and try and meditate on that moon and on the sky at night, and just try and just let it teach you, like, I think the greatest teacher is yourself, really, and just observing the universe, and trying to understand what it tells you. It's telling a story, continuously changing and telling this brand new story every day, every night. So yeah, try and connect with that.
I love that. I absolutely love that. Ed, I was going to ask you, where can we find you? And do you have anything coming up that we need to keep an eye out for?
Well, I mean, you can find me at www.rebelpharma.co.uk. I very much mainly sort of talk about my food growing, my community things there. It's all about to change, actually. I've got a bit to update the website with what's going on this year. I am doing some like connection events with the moon. I just gently starting with the moon this month, with the wolf moon. I'm just have a little gathering of friends, but I'm hoping to do some events, especially around the harvest moon later on this year. That will be a big sort of open public events, so do look out for that. I'm really into sort of rhythms at the moment, like these patterns, rhythms. So yeah, that will be really interesting. We're going to have each of the gatherings, we're going to have like a drum circle, which is going to sort of try and help us relate to these rhythms of life, and to the soil as well as the sky, so yeah, I'm trying to sort of build these immersive events. But yeah, keep an eye out, and I think they're really going to come out and later this year, if I'm honest. Taking it quite slowly this year, trying to make sure that I don't burn out, because yeah, I quite often take on too much. But you can contact me, you can always email me. I love responding to emails. I'm pretty good at that. So do email me from the website if you've got, specific like questions that you'd like to know. And you can find us on Instagram as well. I do like to take photos and share them, including some of the moon. I do take pictures of the moon through my telescope. And that's Rebel Farmer Ed. So Rebel Farmer Ed, ED.
And if and when that does come up, Ed's land is truly magical. I remember, I think I probably went a couple of years ago in January, and it's beautiful. So I didn't get to see it kind of, high at a summer or anything, but it was already looking great, and it's got a really lovely feel to it. I'm really excited to see what you do. I know you're always doing something, so I'm really excited to see what you do going even forward this year. But I will link everything in the show notes so everyone can find you and see what you're up to. Ed, thank you so much for coming on. This has been mind-blowing. I've got so many rabbit holes to go down. It's really inspired me. I'm sure it has our listeners. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Carly. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.